afternoon.
Hello.
Reconvene the hearing. And we have Soho's Fear of Blackmore's Creek and Wines Creek Cone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gallery.
So I've got some hard copies of my legal submissions in case anybody needs those.
That's not being pursued. It's not being pursued.
No.
It's been withdrawn.
No, no, it hasn't actually been formally withdrawn.
But there's no evidence.
No, that's the kind of evidence that there is.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. I'll just start at paragraph 2, where I set out the backgrounds. These two submitters presented previously in three hearing streams. Hearing stream 01, in respect of strategic direction and landscape. Hearing stream 02, in respect of rural chapters and indigenous vegetation in particular. And hearing stream 4, in respect of the subdivision chapter, which I think Commissioner Stevens, you were at as well. But the benefit of Commissioner Hill, we have, without going into too much repetition, you would have seen the evidence try to summarise what has gone on to set the context for this hearing stream. But I still would, I guess, urge you to, if you haven't already, read the evidence that was presented in those previous hearing streams in respect of these committees so that you do have that full context.
I am a catch-up mode.
Yes, a bit. And this hearing stream presents the final part of the case to be presented by these two scheme area submitters. And in summary, the submitters represent two important ski areas that make up part of the Queenstown District world-class ski areas. Ski areas are a critical component of the district's economy and the area's ability to continue to attract large numbers of tourists, not just over winter now, but year-round. The submitters' case in general on the DPA has been to ensure provisions enable adaptability, innovation and certainty on planning and environmental fronts. And in hearing stream 11, the focus is primarily on ensuring the ability to access the ski areas that is enabled through an appropriate planning framework. And also in respect of the Soho area in particular, on ensuring adjacent and connected skiable terrain on the submitted land is included. And we've proposed a revised relief package late last week, so to set the context for that. Paragraph 7, the submitters provided comprehensive evidence in chief for this hearing stream in support of the requested extensions to both Soho and Treble Cone ski area subzones. And the objective of the relief and the evidence in chief, the evidence lodged in March, is to enable integrated access through the extended ski area subzones to the notified ski area subzone with an appropriate suite of controls to provide measures such as landscape effect and amenity. And the resulting package presented in March evidence was a split regime within the ski area subzone, whereby the permissive regime for ski area activity development within the ski area subzone is notified, was largely retained, and within the extension area sort, below the 1100 metres above sea level, two sub areas were created, named the passenger lift corridor and the ski area facilities overlay. Within these sub areas, passenger lift systems and buildings respectively were proposed to be controlled activities, and outside of those areas, but within the wider extension area, those activities were proposed to be restricted discretionary. And a summary of the proposal was included within the evidence of Mr. Ferguson at paragraph 4.7 of the evidence in chief. Sorry, just by way of introduction, Mr. Ferguson to my right, we've gotten into the habit of sitting up together because we have these technical questions that may be directed at myself during opening, it's usually better that the expert addresses them. Having now had the benefit of reviewing the Council's position as set out in its rebuttal evidence of 20 April, along with the full package set out in Council's replies to the other relevant hearing streams, the submitters have carefully considered the points made and can now largely support the position advanced by Council is another option that achieves the submitted objectives, and of course there's a very specific objective in respect of area subzones in chapter 21, objective 21.2.6, and a very specific relevant policy that the council pick up on in its right of reply to that chapter, 21.2.6.5, that relates to access to area subzones. So this revised package also gives effect to those two key provisions in that rural chapter. To be of assistance, the submitted has therefore refined the package in support of Council's position that involves a much smaller extension to the Soho area, covering primarily skiable terrain, and no extension to the Triple Cone ski area subzone, along with consequential changes to the planned provision. And it's submitted that this option could equally achieve the submitted objectives and give effect to that relevant objective and policy in respect of enabling access to ski area subzones in a manner that meets the relevant tests and it gives effect to the objectives and policies. And just to be clear, the submitted relief package submitted in their expert evidence in chief is not being withdrawn and is still supported as one suitable alternative to give effect to the relevant provisions and the submitted core objectives. However, to be of assistance, the submitters can now also support the alternative promoted by Council to object to minor changes. So these submissions therefore focus on the revised proposal that is now primarily in support of the position advanced by Council's experts, which is now the submitter's preferred option. And in summary, this position involves a smaller extension to the Cadrona area subzone, incorporating additional skiable terrain on Soho freehold land, which is actually owned by the Blackman Creek number one LP, the owner of that land, and no extension to the Triple Cone ski area subzone as part of the package, and then ski area activities outside of the zone are proposed to be discretionary, with the exception of passenger lift systems and road access, which is proposed to be restricted discretionary. And the revised relief option that generally supports the position of Council's experts on rebuttal is explained and attached to Mr Burke's and supplementary evidence, and that should be dated 5 May 2017. And Mr Ferguson's evidence appends the plan showing a much smaller extension to the Cadrona ski area subzone into the upper reaches of Callaghan's Creek and should add there and Blackman's Creek. And this is appendix 1. And I just want to make a slight amendment to the next sentence. The extension area sits within and adjacent to the original extension sought and covers additional skiable terrain on freehold land.
On that point, is there a plan that shows both what was sought and what is now sought?
No, we could do that quite easily though.
Well, we need that because we have to come to a conclusion as to whether we have jurisdiction to consider it, and to come to that conclusion we have to know what the difference is.
Yes, that's right. You can put some side by side. Mr. Ferguson's March evidence has the extension as sought.
Yes, but it's like putting two different polygons.
I know, it's not as easy as it could be. So yeah, no, we can arrange for that to be provided.
Yes.
No doubt, quite quickly.
And if it could be overlaid over a topo map, it would make it even easier.
Over a topo map?
Yes.
Yep.
That would then enable us to see the 1100 metre contour.
You were interested in the elevation?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
If that could be done by the end of the week, would be good.
Okay, no problem. You recall that in the evidence in Mr. Ferguson's, Mr. Ferguson's evidence, we did have the 1100 contour marked.
Not all the way around that.
Not all the way around, but with that being of assistance, if that was marked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We've viewed it. We were just quite sure last week.
Yep.
But it helps us if we know which part we viewed was in the submission and which part we need to consider whether it is jurisdiction.
Yes. No, that's clear for the agenda too. And Mr. Ferguson's appendix 2 has the provisions as promoted by the submitters that largely support the Council's position on rebuttal with some consequential amendments that he explains. So he's tried to highlight the changes as compared to Mr. Farr's right reply back in chapter 21.
Yes.
So that's how we try to show that evolution. So the Soho extension, the much smaller extension now sought, reflects the core purpose of the ski area subzone being to provide skiing and activities and ancillary activity. The original extension sought was 283 hectares and extended all the way down to the road, The extension now sought is an order of 181 hectares and covers the higher elevations of primarily skiable terrain. I've just said that there, a paragraph on Mr. McCrossy's evidence in chief, that still applies to the full area now sought. In a summary evidence from Mr. McCrossy and Mr. Darby will provide additional comments on the potential the smaller extension area holds for the Soho ski area development. It is submitted that the evidence clearly establishes this area is entirely appropriate for inclusion in zoning, and there is no evidence as to adverse effects associated specifically with utilising this area in accordance with the zoning provisions that establishes the inappropriateness or otherwise of the use of the area for ski area activities. The continued anticipated and appropriate development of the drone ski area subzone in the Soho ski area would be best given effect to by the extension of the zone now sought. In terms of jurisdiction, the extension appended to Mr. Ferguson's evidence does extend beyond the boundary of the original extension proposed, but is significantly smaller, an order of 102 hectares less. It is all contained on private land and is restricted to higher elevations associated with skiable terrain. The nature and scale of effects associated with the proposed extension are materially less than the original thought. For Treble Cone, in terms of the alternative position now advanced by the submitters largely in support of the Council's position, no amendment to the Treble Cone ski area subzone would be required. There are two key legal questions that, in my submission, are relevant to this hearing stream that I address next. Firstly, the question of the relevance of the existing unlimited resource consents addressed below. And this is relevant due to the existing but unimplemented consents for the Treble Cone gondola and the Snow Farm gondola in the Drone Valley. And then secondly, I address briefly the question of financial viability of potential gondolas, which has been raised by council witnesses as a matter of law. In terms of the existing environment and proposed district plans, as I noted above, this is relevant for Treble Cone, because it's relevant to how the existing consent for the gondola is referenced as part of the existing environment when considering the appropriate plan provisions and boundaries. For Soho, it is relevant to how the existing consent for the Snow Farm gondola is assessed as part of the existing environment and the potential for cumulative effects. So they're relevant for quite different reasons. In summary, it is submitted that in respect of the Treble Cone gondola consent, the evidence from Mr. Darby and Mr. McCrossy is that it is likely to be implemented. That consent therefore forms part of the existing environment, including the future environment, as it may be modified by the implementation of resource consent. Therefore, if considering the extension to the ski area subzone, that is clearly relevant. And when considering the alternative now proffered in respect of a specific restricted discretionary rule for road access and passenger lift systems, it is also a relevant part of the existing environment for the Treble Cone site. In respect of the Snow Farm gondola consent, it is submitted that there is no evidence that consent is likely to be implemented. Therefore, the weight that can be placed on any potential cumulative effects arising from a gondola to Soho in combination with a gondola to the Snow Farm is minimal. Furthermore, and as addressed in more detail below, on the evidence, even if this cumulative effect were considered to be relevant, it is not likely to have a significant adverse effect and is appropriate for the area. Before I launch into my detailed legal submission, I want to check how much detail you'd like me to go into on this. I've set out a comprehensive review of the case law on this point.
We can assist you on that.
Good. I'm aware that Mr. Scott's also addressed your detail on this, and I don't want to waste anybody's time.
Well,
rather than the nub of it.
She addressed us yesterday and said that in reality the point of her submission was that it is not mandatory. That was the point, it's not a mandatory consideration, but it can be a consideration. So I think we understand the point you're making, but I think you're actually saying the same thing.
No, I think that was said yesterday.
Are you saying it's mandatory?
Yes, I'm that,
if you want to say it's mandatory, then you'll have to submit to us on that.
Yeah, so I'll just focus in on one. So I think we are in agreement that existing unimplemented consents can only be relevant if they're likely, if you're satisfied that they're likely to be implemented. We're all okay on that point.
Yes.
So the issue is whether or not once you've satisfied yourself that a consent is likely to be implemented, what do you do with that? Are you required to then consider that as part of the existing environment? Mm-hmm. And it's on page 7 of my submission, but I think the key paragraph from the High Court decision is that paragraph 122, in the first sentence of that paragraph is, in my submission, the judge is not saying, he doesn't use the word may because it's a matter of discretion. He uses the word may in that first sentence because if an existing consent is likely to be implemented but has no relevant effect, then it's not relevant. But if an existing consent that is likely to be implemented has relevant effect, then that is when you consider it as part of the existing environment, and that's the context in which you use the word may. So that is why my submission of the view that the High Court decision does establish that the environment is the environment. If there are existing consents that are unimplemented but are likely to be implemented, one must consider those as part of the existing environment. So that's not exactly the same as mandatory. It's a subtlety, but I think that otherwise you can't get the environment changing from one decision-making process to the other. There's too much uncertainty and there's no logic in that being the position. And if you take, for example, the case of Triple Cone, and you've got evidence that the consent is likely to be implemented, it's the only consent in that area that's obviously of relevance to the assessment of what the existing environment is, it's an easy assessment, there's no uncertainty, it's an entirely logical and sensible way of assessing what the existing environment is. I don't need to delve into that issue because it's no fun consent because it's all about likelihood of implementation. Yeah. So in that case, we cross over quite a few pages to page 12. Oh no, actually I'll take you through to page 36. That paragraph 36 on page 11. I am back in the Padrona Valley now. On the issue of cumulative effects. Putting aside the technical issue of whether or not the snow farm and gondola the consent is relevant, when it comes to the merits and actual potential effects, Ms. Fluker has assessed the potential for cumulative effects associated with the likely gondola route to the Soho area with the consented snow farm gondola route as being overstated by Dr. Reed. Dr. Reed herself stated that the cumulative effects of the potential snow farm gondola and potential Soho gondola are adverse, but has not explained how that is and to what degree. Nor has she assessed in her evidence in chief or rebuttal the degree to which she considers both potential gondolas to be visible. In the absence of having gone through this visibility analysis, there is no foundation for a determination of degree of potential adverse cumulative effects. But by way of contrast, Ms. Fluger has undertaken an assessment of the visibility of the two potential gondola, and on that basis concludes Dr. Reed's concerns in respect of cumulative effects are overstated. So from the above, it follows that the potential cumulative effect of multiple gondolas in one location is not a valid consideration in this plan review. The huge cost and infrastructure necessary for construction of any gondola within the Cadrona Valley means also that in reality, it would be extremely unlikely that more than one gondola would ever be constructed to the Cadrona Street area. I submit that the final location and construction of any gondola here would be ultimately determined by the market, and that the cumulative effect risk is so remote and uncertain, it cannot rightly form the basis of a justification to oppose zoning in this instance. In this regard, either of the options put forward by the applicants, Soho and Triple Cone, are appropriate, either an extension to the ski area subzone with a corridor for access, or the revised provisions and specific rules allowing for passenger lifts or road access to the zone as a restricted discretionary activity. It must be remembered that the ski area subzone at Cadrona in particular is already in place. Ski area activities and the significant benefits they provide are therefore already deemed appropriate in this landscape, and logically the associated effects of extending the ski area activities over further skiable terrain and accessing the ski area activities is similarly concentrated and appropriate in the landscape with the right controls. Moving on to financial viability. Again, do I need to address you on this? I understand this was addressed yesterday. in terms of the relevance of Lynn's Bank's recommendation that where she's got no evidence on the commercial viability of the proposal, she can't support it. I think Ms. Scott confirms that it's not relevant to your consideration.
I'm pretty clear on that too.
So I won't go over that. And then the last point I really just wanted to address under the heading hearing process is how this hearing speaks to the other hearings, because as will now be apparent in the context of this primarily Hacking hearing, the submitters have been able to review the position advanced by counsel's experts on rebuttal in combination with counsel's rights to reply previously, and have come up with a sort of revised package. It's become apparent in our assessment that there is this alternative position that submitters can support and in fact prefer, but is largely in support of counsel's position, subject to minor changes to text. Now, I looked through the procedural directions which I set out, and I couldn't quite find something that was directly on point, which is just why I wanted to raise this with you, Mr. Chair.
If I can answer the question as well.
Right.
We have submissions from Ms. Scott in the definitions hearing as to how other panels could recommend to that panel changes to definitions that may be appropriate.
Okay.
And she agreed with me yesterday that the same sort of mechanism could be used if this panel found that a better solution than changing the maps might be to change the rules or something.
Mm-hmm.
We could recommend that to the relevant hearing.
In other words,
there is always, as far as I'm concerned, on mapping hearings, the option of using a rule outcome to get the same
outcome.
To get the same end.
If there were other parties who could be affected, then we would actually have to call for written submissions on the matter.
But we'd actually have to look at whether that's an issue first. So the matters of natural justice won't be ignored.
Yes, I just want to get that on the record.
We don't want to be tripped up at the next stage.
Cool. And I just wanted to, I'll read out my final paragraph 51 then just to finish off, just to recall my witnesses. To emphasise that we're not relitigating matters that are heard already, primarily in respect of hearing stream 2 and hearing stream 4, but note that it is critical to consider the provisions of these parts of the text alongside the mapping relief sought. As presented in these submissions and the submitted revised relief package, it is clear that the text and the zoning maps can work together and provide effective alternative outcomes to promote social and economic well-being that derives from successful ski areas, while ensuring effects are mitigated to an appropriate level. This can be achieved with either extensions of the zones to the roads as originally sought, along with comprehensive plan provisions, or by way of the alternative package tabled today that is largely in support of the Council's position. If there are further questions, I'll call my first witness.
I only have one, and it's really just to clarify the issue of existing environment, and particularly these consents. The Treble Cone consent, I'm not sure when the consent actually commenced, but it was granted around about 2008 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So presumably the 10 years is...
The 10 year next year.
So when your submission is that it's likely to give effect to the next year. So it's likely to be given effect to in the next year, or presumably you're partly relying on the evidence saying the Treble Cone is the same issue, well, it's a different issue for snow farm, but if you get the relief you're seeking, then effectively that consent is kind of embodied in a plan and it becomes a bit of a control activity. And then you may not need to give it effect to. But what you were telling us is you'll either seek an extension, you'll kind of like to either seek an extension to that consent or actually build it for next year.
No, I'm not committing that they'll build it in the next year, but if it's the election date is extended, that still, that doesn't undermine the likelihood of them.
So what you're saying, your client's commitment basically is the evidence that they are going to keep that consent alive.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So then just go to the Snow Farm one, and while we don't have any evidence, I mean, so this isn't, you know, around a factual case, so we don't have any facts in front of us to say they're not going to.
Yep.
And whether that's material about the cumulative effect is something we'll need to deal with.
Mm.
How, from a legal perspective, I mean, I think it's going to expire or lapse around about the same time. I think it's is it next year as well?
I think it's next year as well,
yeah. So how do we balance the way back? I mean, we've got no evidence saying you're going to, but we've got, equally got no one saying we're not going.
I can't recall the exact words in the test, but I don't, if you have to be satisfied that it's likely to be implemented, then you do, you will need some evidential basis for that satisfaction.
Isn't there an issue though with the triple cone one in the same respect? Because what you're saying is that the consent would be extended, and that requires a decision of the council to allow that to occur. That's not. There's no, we can't rely on that, can we?
No, you've got, but we'll have the evidence of Mr. Darby in particular about the plans at Triple Cone and the necessity for the gondola and the fact that it's definitely part of its future for the reasons that he's going to expand on in the summary because it's become particularly relevant.
But
the election date is still a full year and a half away, so you know, we don't need to get too
to sort of focus on that, I think, is a relevant matter. Yeah, I can see Commissioner Hill's point that we're not necessarily talking about two different sets of circumstances. It's just in your case we have someone saying we're going to do it.
Because of
eventually.
These reasons. Yeah, so
eventually. They, subject to a council decision, probably. That sort of extender.
Well, not necessarily, it's just that the. Yeah.
Well, we don't have any evidence that's going to happen next year.
No, there is no evidence
that's going to happen next
year.
So, and for the council to extend, my understanding, to extend the last period requires certain conditions to be met.
There's certain relevant matters, it's not there's a misunderstanding of the extension test. It's not a threshold that has to be met. There are relevant matters that a council considers when someone applies to extend the election, the election date of a consent. So it's a subtle but important point that.
But it could go either way, couldn't it?
Hmm?
It could go either way.
Well, that the council has a discretion, yeah. Well, thank you. My first witness is Mr. Darby. Yes. Right, so I'd like to bring in my witnesses. Could you confirm your name is John Gerard Darby? So you have prepared a brief evidence in chief dated 28 March 2017 and a summary dated 9 May 2017 for the first of this hearing.
Yes.
So you confirm where you make statements of facts in your evidence, those statements are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief.
Correct.
And if you could please read out your summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So
we have a written summary, was it?
Oh, we do have a written summary, sorry, I've got a written hand of the
yes, you had that this morning.
Sorry.
My full name, John Gerard Darby.
Could you just wait, Mr. Darby, so I move
on? Yes.
Ridiculously, what the determination of
My name is John Gerrit Darby. I'm the director of Darby Partners Limited, a specialist land planning and design company based in Queenstown. My evidence in chief outlines my experience and qualifications relevant to this evidence in respect to this area subzone, and also notes that I'm the controlling shareholder of Triple Cone Ski Area and the sole owner of the Soho and Blackness Creek properties for clarity. My evidence in chief provides an overview of the following matters: an overview of the land ownership and tenure of the Soho and Blackmans Creek ski area and the Triple Cone ski area, a review of the core objectives and philosophies relevant to the development, construction and operation of the ski areas in the district, and thirdly, a summary of the intention of the submitted extension areas being to enable management of the ski area subzone in a more integrated and optimised fashion. My summary of the revised position, firstly, having read and thought through the rebuttal evidence of council's experts that were lodged on 10 March, I quickly appreciated the concerns, in fact unforeseen in many sense, raised in respect of the Soho and Triple Cone ski area subzone extension sought, as well as other various ski area subzone extensions. In response, I worked closely with the experts presenting evidence on behalf of both Soho and Triple Cone in this hearing to devise an alternative which would achieve the objective of the submitters, while also addressing the key concerns of council in respect to the original extension areas sought. The resulting position generally supports the council's position and seeks a comparatively minor extension to the Cadrona ski area subzone only. The new approach is covered in detail in the supplementary evidence from Mr. Ferguson, and in summary represents an option that significantly reduces the originally requested extension for Soho to only that needed for the core use of winter skiing activities and activities ancillary to that purpose. And to that effect, the extension to the Triple Cone ski area, or the subzone area, can be removed in its entirety. The consequential changes to the text of the rural chapter ensure the important positive economic, social and cultural effects derived from the continued development and diversification of the ski area subzones in this district are enabled by recognising the necessity of securing appropriate access from the district road network. Moving to the refining of the planning maps to extend the subzone, the significantly reduced extension sought now at Soho covers the area which is able to be used for winter skiing activities, and that has been a result of several winters of actual study and use investigation of that upper basin. Since the original submission was lodged in October 2015, investigations have been ongoing into the potential to develop the ski area. In fact, more than the potential to, in fact, we're underway with development of that ski area. Most recently, my personal investigations have shown that the areas in the upper Callaghan's Creek and Blackmans Creek basin are ideal for skiing, and include a point that in the maps is one that we have regularly used to pick up points when exploring this in our snow cap. The version of the extension appended to Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence of 5 May includes an area with potential, excellent potential, to access the Willow Saddle and the wider Willow Soho Basin area. This area of skiable terrain over freehold land is ideal for a range of intermediate skiing opportunities,
and is logically ideal for inclusion in the ski area subzone and makes up a better physiographic unit. It's important to note that the original ski area subzone boundaries have been drawn somewhat arbitrarily on the planning maps, in fact, I recall back then, and do not necessarily reflect the bounds of skiable terrain. I consider it important that the opportunity is now taken to refine those boundaries that reflect the nature of activities being undertaken on the ground and which supports the growth, consolidation and development of the existing ski area subzones, as well as the efficient use of existing infrastructure. Compared to the ski area subzone as notified, the proposed extension is a relatively minor, small extension and is restricted to higher elevations that is ideal for inclusion into the Soho ski area and wider ski area subzone due to its topography and aspect. Turning to Treble Cone, the consented gondola to the Treble Cone ski area is a critical part of a development plan for the long-term security of the ski area. As anticipated, the current access road will reach carrying capacity and the gondola is the solution to addressing growth and particularly safety matters arising from that carrying capacity. Also, the consented gondola is necessary to reduce the current risk associated with access being dependent on the ski access road, which is vulnerable from closure from time to time. And to add to that, we see it as an essential element. We do intend to progress the gondola, and I was able to further expand on the question to the council that as the major shareholder, we are finally now in a position to apply capital to see that gondola to fruition. Failure to do it would see little reason to invest further capital or even the continued operation of Treble Cone long term, because the road, we have had a multiple fatality on that road. It is limited to the extent that it can be upgraded to increase the capacity, and roads at that altitude geologically are unreliable. So without the safety net and reliability of a cableway, the continued viability of Treble Cone is seriously in question. And I can't stress that point. Moving now to the refining associated text of the plan for the ski area subzone. The refined plan provisions appended to Mr. Ferguson's summary evidence are intended to be generally in support and complement the council's position and how it proposes to manage access to the ski area subzone and activities ancillary to that in the general rural zone framework. The refined text provisions go hand in hand with the option of reducing the submitted extension areas. The revision to the text largely reflect the sentiments expressed in section 19 to 23 of my evidence in chief regarding the diversification, efficient and effective use of the rural land resource in high country areas, ensuring improved certainty and flexibility and future access options to these ski areas. It's critical to their viability and resilience, as noted earlier, and will ensure they are given the opportunity to continue to provide substantial economic, social, cultural well-being returns to the community. In terms of the proposed restricted discretionary rule for vehicle access, passenger lifts and other transportation systems, I recommend the matters of discretion include reference to important matters such as operational requirements, positive effects and implications for the economic viability of ski area activities, to ensure that the restricted discretionary assessment of any proposal covers matters that are also critical to the development of the ski area. We're operating in an international market, and to ensure the long-term sustainability of the ski area industry in this district, we need to ensure that the ski areas continue to develop and remain attractive and viable. I believe this is an important factor for the consent authority to take into account. And in terms of the status of ski area activities generally outside of the ski area subzone, I consider there to be no justification or logic to imposing a stricter regime for ski area activities outside of the ski area subzone than compared to the operative district plan status. The consequences of the non-complying regime would be to land lock the ski area subzones and restrict their future, their critical future growth and development. Thank you, Stephen.
On when you mentioned the roads and its limitations up to Triple Cone and the advantage of the cableway, do you envisage the road becoming redundant if there was a cableway in place? Would all maintenance and except for potentially very large bits of equipment end up going up the cableway and the road becomes pretty much redundant?
The road itself, which is not a wide carriage width, exists and would be maintained to the extent that, but not for the passage of the volume of traffic that currently we're building towards at the moment. So it would be certainly essential for cartage of heavy equipment, for example, large goods, etc. And over the winter period, there may be periods where it's not required to be cleared of snow unless operationally we were required to equip or service the area with goods that are unable to be carried by cableway. The cableway has the capacity to take general stores and even traditional sort of litter or waste packed down. And indeed is quite an efficient system to do so, but there is machinery or fuel, for example, for the snow grooming fleets, the servicing of snow groomers, that's heavy equipment. And the road itself is in place and we hope it remains so, but the demands on it and the restrictions and operational issues its width creates would be avoided if it was limited to service vehicles, as opposed to being an alternative public access road. The summer use of Treble Cone is growing importance as access to the reserve areas beyond Treble Cone, and we have an agreement with the Department of Conservation to make our road available over summer to the public to access the upper alpine areas. And we would see that continuing if, for example, the gondola was not operational over the summer. To that extent, the road in itself would not be redundant. The demands put on the road, however, would be dramatically less and be able to operate it in a more safer manner, ultimately, over the peak winter period without that traffic pressure. So, that's a long answer, Commissioner, but in short, it would not be closed and removed. It would remain as a service road. And an emergency escape route, should it ever be required, if there is any problems with the gondola and evacuating our visitors.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just continue that discussion a little bit? So just at the moment, in the winter, the road and the car park, is it at capacity now?
They're getting very close on the peak days, and while we can continue to expand the car park, the road itself is more problematic, and of course has the consequent effects as well of having to earthworks at that altitude and the engineering associated. So the road currently is below the restriction of the car park that it operates. But shortly after solving that, we do get to the point of the road. And it is also a safety operation. You can push quite a lot of vehicles up and down a road, but the safe operation, the separation of vehicles, particularly in icy or difficult conditions, is an important consideration. And stressing the road during high peak times can increase the risk of incidents.
And, I mean, this is not a leading question in the sense, and answer if you can. So presumably if you decide, or you said you want to put the gondola in, presumably these things are not cheap, and to make it viable, requiring people to use it by having a car park, I assume at the bottom, which is what you can see for the others, and restricting vehicles to driver, presumably that goes to your economics in terms of making this thing viable, so people have to use it.
We would much prefer to have a wide sealed road like Coronet Peak has, particularly maintained by others, which is quick and easy access. However, it is what it is. We have a narrow road that was probably very adequate in the early phases of Treble Cone and the local or the New Zealand market comfortable with driving on alpine roads that with chains, etc. We're finding increasingly with the international visitors, the Australians and others, their driving skill and experience is such that they don't quickly and easily conquer that challenge. So coming back to economic viability, gondolas, the gondola when we had it consented, that back then was about a $12 million investment. In today's market, it's closer to 18. And the return over what may be 150,000 visitors over the winter, and with that sort of investment, does become a challenge, as well as you've got the operating cost. However, the wear and tear and true economic cost and impact of burning of energy, etc., of everyone driving up in cars, particularly on a powder day when mostly there's one person in the car, has its own attendant costs that ultimately we have to recover in the lift price. The expansion of the parking area and the maintenance of that road is considerable. So it is viable because it delivers an improved and safer visitor experience and increases the carrying capacity to meet the increased demand. As per se, you don't make a lot of money out of gondolas unless there is a consequent improvement in the product, the other end, and capacity. So it's a balancing one, and yes, in short, Coronet Peak are fortunate.
Yeah, right. No, I understand. Thank you, Ben. Part of the goal is, in my thinking, to just giving effective consent that we're talking about, Amy Galloway, about understanding what that is, and I think
yes.
What you're saying to me is probably the road is almost at capacity into expand the operation to what you want and to go further.
Even maintain it. I mean, the alternative is to abandon the operation of the ski area because it has to be economically viable, cash positive, to replace its lifts, maintain the increased safety standards that are demanded of us. And you get to a point where you're at risk of losing your entire access to invest. What would be, we've recently planned with a lift company a new lift that's a $10 million investment, and you go, oh boy, what happens if we lost the road? Well, we can pick up and move the lift, and that has been even considered as a what we call a safety plan for investing capital. Now, it would be a great shame. It's a high altitude ski area that enjoys reliable snow cover and is rated one of the top ski areas in the world, the only ski area in New Zealand to receive that rating, and has won 4 international ski awards as the best ski area in Australasia. So we punch above our weight for the small numbers, but continued capital investment, which is essential in snow making and improved systems and safety, has to address the risk issue, and the gondola was an important part of that strategy.
Thank you, Pat. Just in moving to Soho, just your view of, as the owner, and now suggesting that the ski area be reduced, so removing a big chunk of it, particularly removing the overlay and sort of gondola roof. So again, the question, and you might want to answer it, you can either, if restricted discretionary activities based outside was, you might take the chances and do that, or
yes,
you might rely on the controls.
Yes, both are possible. However, the motivation for simplifying the extension sort was the unintended consequences of the zone moving well outside the principal activity area, giving rise to possible outcomes or effects not intended or understood. So we did actually think, okay, maybe we have an overlay that deals with restricting the activities below the operating altitude. And that was our position. Then we looked at it and said, you know, if there is a recognition of the importance of linking these activity areas to the roading network, then we don't have to predict where the zone extension would run, and also run the risk of, actually, we were cognizant of what council identified. They said, hey, if you bring the ski area subzone all the way down, you might have all sorts of development activities, not, you know, necessarily intended, but could occur. How do you manage that? An overlay was one approach where we say, well, it's principally just for access connection or a potential cableway. But then you end up drawing a very big area if you have two options for a gondola line. And we think that the gondola, if there's policy in the district plan that recognises the importance of these ski area subzones, and it is weighted against also one that delivers the optimum outcome for the district plan objectives and policy, and that's addressing the effects of it, then it should succeed. So we're really attempting to say, look, we're only interested in linkage, access linkage. We're prepared to have a merit argument so long as the matters of discretion fully acknowledge the importance of accessing. Currently the Soho ski area, which is the largest undeveloped ski terrain available, actually probably in New Zealand, certainly in this area. The land adjoining the Crown Range Road has a well-formed road on it already. We would not be wanting to be forced to use Cadrona's Road with all the complexities that may give to, and our preferences for a cableway linkage, but we would only want to pursue and give effect to one that truly was the best option to otherwise using the road. And both could be considered. Indeed, one could be staged ahead of the other. And we have no real concern that it would put at risk a gondola proposal if the matters of discretion are well balanced.
Thank you very much.
Just in answer to one of the questions of Commissioner Holmes today, you talked about the difficulty of identifying a corridor may lead to an inappropriate location, and a better one could be there. Would that apply at Triple K? What have you really got, the best corridor?
We believe we have, because during the course of the hearing, Mr. Commissioner, a lot of geological engineering work had been undertaken, and indeed, the lodge was very late during that whole planning process.
Yes,
and it was helpful for all. In the case of Soho, we've got a clearly identified donder alignment that's been fully engineered and fully developed and costed. The geological stability is, in this case, being well researched, and it is the preferred link. So, to that extent, where we sought the extension would well accommodate it. The nature of the staging of it may equally require some variation to that extent of that corridor of a minor nature. And instead of submitting, I don't think we had scope to submit to expand it or bury it, we felt that the appropriate one is these are very specific elements. There is a right place for them according to their visual effects, the geological stability and efficiency, the accessing of the roading network altogether, and they don't need a very wide acreage of zoning to accommodate them. And we looked at other ways than simply extending the zone. And it saved a lot of work writing more overlays or rules or restrictions about what you can do below the snow line, because inadvertently it might give rise to inappropriate development. And indeed, that's what council's planner or report alerted us to. And we said, well, we have no intention of doing that. And what's the solution? Either an overlay which is restrictive below the snow line, and we believe that submission is still on the table from ourselves. But equally, when we look at the history of the zone, it really does relate to the activity area, and we thought clear policy about the importance of addressing the linkage from the road network to those activity areas seemed a more intelligent approach, because they are very specific. They don't need massive hectares of land that could otherwise be a Trojan horse for inappropriate activities. And our motivation for this was not to see an overly restrictive regime within the activity area to take account of those unforeseen effects that may occur in the zone. So it was a view we took that this could go in a circle of debate as to what you can and cannot do. We must be very clear what we can do in the activity area, the upper area, and we must be very clear that there will be fair consideration given to the most efficient linkage, be it a cableway or road, to the roading network, because of the importance to the regional economy, the livelihood and whole viability of this area for a visitor industry. So, a little unusual, Mr. Commissioner, we have someone submit to reduce something, but it's weighted against the other comments we made.
Before Mr. Crossley starts, at the end of his evidence, there's two of his appendices that I'm just going to hand up correct copies of. There's a document to say it's a road lease to Triple Cone, and I just noticed that the copies attached to his evidence are undisputed copies, so just for the record, I'll make sure you've got the copies, but we'll do that later. So do you confirm your name? Your full name is Hamish McCrossey?
Yes, that's correct.
You prepared a brief of evidence dated 28 March and a summary dated 9 May for the purpose of this hearing. That's correct. Do you confirm that we make statements of fact they are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Mm-hmm.
And when you express your opinion, you hold that opinion based out on your experience and expertise as set out in your LSG?
Yes.
And read your summary.
My name is Hamish McCrosty. My evidence in chief, dated 28th of March 2017, outlines my experience and qualifications relevant to this evidence in respect of the ski area subzones, mapping hearings. My evidence in chief provides an overview of the following matters in relation to both Soho ski area and Triple Cone ski area. Access related needs for the viable operation, expansion and diversification of ski area subzones, and B, activities to be conducted in respect of areas of the requested extension to the ski area subzones to provide for year-round ski area activities and ancillary services to support those activities. The majority of my evidence in chief focused on the importance of the extension areas for security and flexibility for future access options for ski area subzones. I've since worked with other experts presenting evidence for Soho and Triple Cone and understand the recommendation that similar security can be achieved in other ways than an extension of the ski area subzone boundaries all the way to the roading networks. The original 1,100 metres above sea level contour lines, which were provided in my evidence in chief, have now also been removed from the revised map submitted. These were originally shown to indicate a rough approximation of the snow line and to show a demarcation between where winter skiing areas usually occur and other ancillary support activities anticipated in the extension areas down to the road. However, if the option of a much reduced extension is taken up, there's no need to demarcate the 1,100 metre above sea level line. I understand from Mr. Ferguson that the simplified planning regime of the smaller extensions does not need activity to be treated differently based upon the rough approximation of the snow line. The revised provisions set out in Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence of 5th of May make provision for vehicle access, passenger lift systems and other transportation systems. The third term, and other transportation systems, I recommend is necessary to ensure that transportation options arising from technological advancements, such as the Nikila open rail systems that I describe in my evidence 21st of April 2016, are not precluded accidentally. A base building for a passenger lift system to be consented under the revised framework detailed in Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence would need to support the following functions in an integrated design as a minimum: a drive station, a covered storage area for gondola cabins and maintenance, that's basically a garage for gondola cabins to be housed as they don't stay on the line, inward and outward goods for uphill and downhill transportation, ticketing and equipment rentals often, or ticketing would be required, rentals as an ancillary would be a logical activity to take place, and obviously for people waiting, toileting and cafe and waiting area. We're not talking major restaurants or anything like that. We're not talking about activities that would attract people to that in its own right. It would be as people pass, come and go. The revised provisions also include, as a matter of discretion, economic viability. In this competitive international industry, I believe it is important to ensure council has the ability to take this factor into account when making decisions on resource consents. My summary in regards to Soho. Attached to Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence dated 4th of May is the reduced extension area for the Soho ski area now sought. The reduced extension area at Soho covers only additional skiing terrain and no longer extends to the public road. Soho's investigations have shown the much smaller extension area is ideal intermediate terrain and it would be a valuable addition to the wider Soho ski area. And this area also overlaps part of the consented access track to Soho. This extension is entirely on freehold land and would support the wider Soho area in terms of its overall package as an attractive ski area. It is important to note that the Cadrona ski area subzone covers two separate and discrete areas, being the Cadrona ski area or Alpine Resort and the Soho ski area. The two landholdings make up important constituent parts of the overall Cadrona ski area subzone. The Soho Park is one of the last areas, if not the last area in New Zealand, that can be developed under a fully permitted regime in terms of it is part of an existing ski area subzone and is fully permitted in terms of its land holding under the Commission of Crown Lands. And in conclusion, the ability to develop, grow and consolidate the ski areas as a whole, it is important to recognise the integration of ski area activities with adjacent land uses, and particularly the district road network. Changing technology and the provision of passenger lift systems means that the plan should provide a suitably flexible framework to be able to account for those technological advancements into the future. In reality, commercial factors and the market will determine how and where passenger lift systems will finally be implemented. And I believe it is unlikely this will present a cumulative effect of multiple lift systems to one place in the future. It is equally critical to provide for road access. As I have noted in previous evidence to these hearings, all of the ski fields in the Queenstown Lakes District have road access to them. This is necessary for construction and emergency access at a minimum. Provided potential effects are addressed, for example, dust and visual amenity, can be an alternative form of transport for operations of a ski area. While I support passenger lift systems as a key alternative, such systems may be more viable or effective in the future as technology advances, but it is critical that in the meantime road access is enabled.
Just one question. Just when you mentioned ski areas subzone to provide for year-round ski area activities, so that's obviously including what summer activities up there as well.
Yes, I think when you look at the resources and the investments that are made into these areas, the recognition of some summer activities such as mountain biking, hiking, walking, should be recognised.
And when we went on our site visit and you drove us up there, where we turned around and we were looking into the basin which you'd like to have zoned, we were at approximately what altitude there?
I think we were around about 1275 metres.
So where you were pointing out to us the bottom of that basin there would have been around that 1100.
That's around the 1100 metre mark, yes. And you viewed the whole extent of the area that we have included since as well, so you have viewed that. The original line we had was a smaller ridge line, and we've just taken it out to the actual ridge line of the basin to include a little more.
Thank you.
I know your question, Commissioner, at the start about whether you viewed everything.
Yes. Well, I understood that we viewed it.
Yes.
I just want to make sure where the line is on the main part.
Yes.
In relation to what we viewed.
Yeah. One comment and one question. Thank you for driving us so safely after hearing Mr. Darby. I'm more concerned about that. The second question, it may actually not be a question for you, it might be really for the state of Galloway, Mr. Bergen. This whole issue of economic viability, because in your legal submission you talked about economic viability not being relevant to road.
Yep.
I think the context that's being talked about is just flipped around.
Yes.
In this context. So it's not looking at whether the developer can do it, but it's really looking at the overall viability of and Mr. Ferguson's revised provision talks about one of the matters, operational requirements of economic viability of ski area activity.
Yeah.
It almost seems to me it needs to be, well, tell me if I'm right or wrong, it's really the viability of this of the zone, isn't it?
Yeah, more ski area. Because it's proposed as a restricted discretionary framework, because the case law is still a little bit dynamic about those positive effects that a council can consider when it's looking at a restricted discretionary activity, and because we consider that it is relevant when a council is evaluating a consent application to be able to take into account the the big picture, the financial big picture of the operation as a whole. The long-term sustainability of the ski area and how the transport relates to that. So it is quite, it's subtly an important different factor.
I understand that. I confess right now, I'm not sure I agree with that. That's why I was asking the question really, is about what that would require for the person who's processing the application to understand the whole, well, so the economic viability. But I think what you're really saying is, that, well, I'll put this just a bit later, it's really looking at the whole positive effect, and I accept, and certainly the next discussion, you put the positive effect of the writing. So I'll put that question later on, but whether economic viability are the right words, or is some form of positive effect of the whole
activity.
Yep, so it wasn't really a question, I understand what you're saying, yes, about needing to know that, I want to see, I understand that kind of context, but it's different than I think what your legal submission was saying, which we're not to inquire whether Mr. Darley really can afford to do it.
That's right, like yeah.
But what you're saying is we should inquire is whether he can afford not to do it.
Right,
and that also seems problematic.
At the time of consent, not at this point.
Yes, but I'm just wondering whether it's actually a different phrase that needs to be used.
Yeah, there might be a better word.
Yes.
Right.
I don't think it's whether Mr. Darby's economics are affected. It's the economics of the district.
Of the operation,
Just for turning to your page 7 in your summary of Mr. McCoskey.
Yes.
Just a couple of queries. And perhaps I could disclose that in, while you were enjoying the summer holidays, I went and travelled on a few gondolas in Europe to get the snow line. is it? You've said there are covered storage areas for gondola cabins. Do they need to be at the base or can they be at the top?
They can be at the top. And I guess it depends where a lot of the activities such as... it depends where the drive station is as well, because when the thing starts up in the morning, there's someone controlling the things going back onto the line, so it really depends on what your control mechanism is. If you can get someone to the top to start a lift, and then they can load the line up from the top, then that's preferable, but if it's at the bottom, then...
Okay. And where are the activities? It's more sensible to pull the line up or to push it up with the line.
Yeah.
I also have wonder of the same questions. You did say the equipment vehicles could be ancillary, but they equally could be at the top or the bottom.
Yes, they could be.
I mean, if you're hiring skis at the bottom, then you've got to have someone on the gondola to take them, don't you? Although always people who own them, their own will.
Well, they'll carry them.
There was a gondola that I had been on when I was skiing in Switzerland where they actually had specific provision for the skis on the outside.
And most cabins do have that now. Yeah. But there's a tendency in some areas where they like to have everything inside and they have racks on the inside, but that's a bigger cabin that's in there as well.
And just in terms of the cafe, how long are people going to be waiting for to get onto a gondola?
Depends on, there's usually an arrival window for a ski area, for example, from around about 8:30 to 10:30. It's a 2-hour arrival window. And you'd have a lift capacity that would hopefully enable the number of people that your terrain capacity can cope with. But it may be a rush, it may be squeezed into an hour arrival. So you would need somewhere for people to wait. You would hope that the wait isn't that long, but in doing so you'd need somewhere for them to toilet and somewhere to buy coffee.
Would they not go to a cafe if they lost their place in the queue? Seriously, it happens.
£1 now? I don't know. It's like, yeah, can we? A lot of people like their coffee. But we're not talking about a restaurant or a meal or a, or a reason for people to go here and there alone. So.
Just a couple of points of clarification in your evidence. On page 10, in paragraph 37, you're talking there about, and at the end of that paragraph, you're talking about earthworks and battle heights, etc. Are you referring there to pists or bike trails? I was unsure. Or both?
Sorry, can you rephrase it?
In paragraph 37, you're talking about a range of activities on the mountain, and then you say things such as battle heights, which require engineering over heights and certain volumes would be unnecessarily captured, and these activities restricted by volume. I was just wondering whether you're talking about the creation of pists or bike trails. What is it you're referring to there?
Yeah. Oh, you see. Sorry, Commissioner, I was reading up. I was talking about here about things such as biking and walking trails.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, so narrower and more minor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's clear. Thank you.
That your name is Egon Pfluger and you've prepared a brief of evidence dated 28 March and a summary dated 9 May for the purpose of this hearing?
Yep.
Do you confirm that we make statements of fact, those statements are correct?
Yes.
So there's been knowledge of belief?
Yes.
And we express your opinion, your basic opinion held on your, based on your experience and expertise that you set out in your evidence and check?
Yes.
Thank you. Please read your summary.
You want me to make the correction?
Yes. Yes, correct. So I've got one very small correction to my evidence sheet, the one dated 28th March. In paragraph 50, I incorrectly stated that for Treble Cone, it was an environmental court decision. In fact, it was just a council decision. It was just an interim first council decision followed by another one, rather than an environmental one. That's all. So I'll now read my summary. My name is Yvonne Pfluger. My evidence in chief dated 28th of March 2017 outlines my experience and qualifications relevant to this evidence in respect of the ski area subzone mapping hearing. My evidence in chief provides a detailed description of the existing landscape character and values found within the existing Treble Cone and Sligo ski fields, as well as within the proposed SASF extension areas. In my assessment, I conclude that the landscape's ability to absorb change within these extension areas is relatively high due to the existing modifications in the ski areas and the existing access to the ski areas. I have undertaken a detailed assessment of the existing environment of the ski areas at Treble Cone Soho as well as the broader landscape context within the Motapahu and Cadrona valleys. For Treble Cone, I have to take into account the existing access road and the consented gondola alignment, including an identified base station area as part of the existing environment within the SASF extension. In the Soho extension, as submitted to the road, a recently constructed access track exists on the slopes. In my view, the presence of the existing distinctive modes of intensive development within the SASF needs to be acknowledged in the context of the wider ONLs of the district, which are otherwise largely free of man-made structures. Subsequent to finishing my evidence in chief, the submitters developed an alternative approach which is summarised in Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence. This includes a much smaller extension to the Cadrona SASF than originally proposed, while there would be no extension to the existing Treble Cone boundary. Mr. Ferguson also outlines the further changes to the rural zone and SASF rules that better enable the provision of vehicle access and passenger lift access to both ski areas from outside the SASF in place of extensions to the area itself. For Soho, the revised proposal is to extend the area of the Cadrona SASF into the upper reaches of Callaghan's Creek and Blackman's Creek Basin to provide opportunity for skiing. In all other respects, the boundary of the Cadrona SASF remains as notified within the PDP. Treble Cone. I have assessed the ability for the landscape around Treble Cone to absorb the effects of new forms of access to the snow line. I should also add that I was involved in the hearing for the gondola at the time. I understand that in planning terms, the access can be enabled by either the extension of the asset boundary to the now aspiring road as set out in the evidence in chief, or by the restricted discretionary rule in the rural zone as proposed in Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence. In terms, the effects in terms of what I have assessed are largely the same. Under the full extension option, I consider the spatial restrictions of buildings and lifts as they relate to the potential passenger lift corridor and associated buildings appropriate in order to ensure change is contained within visually disturbed corridors where the landscape values of the wider SASF area are able to be managed through an appropriate consent process. If a gondola was to be processed as a restricted discretionary activity instead, as outlined under the version summarised by Mr. Ferguson, I consider that a similar outcome could be achieved. Soho. Similarly, for Soho, an overlay was proposed under the full extension of the SASF to the Cadrona valley floor to ensure that the landscape effects as they would be experienced from the Cadrona highway and other places within the valley can be managed. Again, this would, in my view, lead to similar outcomes as the proposed alternative with a reduced spatial extension to the SASF in combination with a restricted discretionary activity status for a gondola outside. The much reduced extension to the area of to the Soho SASF, which is 180 hectares, as proposed as an alternative, is located high in the Blackman Creek Basin, extending down to approximately the 900 metre contour. This basin is visually relatively contained due to the existing topography created by surrounding ridgelines. The upper basin, which would be included in the alternative SASF extension, is relatively low in gradient compared to the lower steep valley slopes inside the Blackman Creek and its tributaries. I consider that ski-related activities within this basin would be unlikely to cause high visual effects given the topography and recessed location of the high-lying basin. Council evidence. The points addressed by Dr. Reed in her rebuttal evidence as they relate to the Soho SASF are largely irrelevant should the commissioners prefer the option as set out in Mr. Ferguson's supplementary evidence. However, if the full extension is still to be considered, then my response to the issues addressed in Dr. Reed's paragraph 4547 is as follows. The visibility of the potential gondola within the SASF extension is raised as an issue by Dr. Reed in light of the undeveloped nature of the Upper Cadrona Valley. As outlined in my evidence, the partial views to a very limited number of potential gondola towers would be restricted to few short stretches of road at long viewing distances. And I should also refer to my paragraph 62 there, where I describe in detail the visibility. And in particular the fact that the top four or five towers which you would see from the Upper Cadrona Valley are actually within the existing SSA rather than the extension area. So I think that's worth adding in that respect. In my opinion, this would not lead to significant visual effects that would affect the landscape character of the Upper Valley at these viewing distances. I do not consider the Upper Cadrona Valley to be remote, given that it contains the highly frequented Crown Range road. In relation to Dr. Reed's concerns relating to sprawl, I consider that the potential to perceive the base station building in the area proposed for activity overlay as sprawling development is very low. While the location of the facility overlay is relatively close to Cadrona Township, it is located on a separate landform, and due to its utilitarian nature, a base station would, in my opinion, be sufficiently different to be not perceived as sprawl of the existing township development. I consider this location favourable, as it is in proximity to existing development without causing high visual effects on residences in the area. In my view, this is preferable to a location that is well away from existing development or directly within the cluster of the township, which would appear to be the alternative. As Dr. Reed notes correctly, the terminal building of the McDougall Express Gondola is or will be located on the ridge line near Mount Cadrona, which is most relevant in the context of Cypress Hill. Dr. Reed's rebuttal evidence covering Treble Cone addresses her concerns in relation to landscape effects of buildings on the valley floor. In her paragraph 5.4, she questions the advantages of the inclusion of a ski area overlay. It should be noted that under the submitter's original proposal, lifts and associated facilities would be a restricted discretionary activity outside the overlay while controlled within. In my view, this would provide guidance in terms of appropriate location of these structures into areas where the change can be more easily absorbed away from the valley floor next to aspiring road. Conclusion. In my view, the proposed SSN extension, whether by way of lines on maps or appropriate restrictive discretionary rules, for Treble Cone and Soho represent a logical extension to these ski fields, where development under the amended release sought, as described in my and Mr. Ferguson's evidence and supplementary evidence, could take place without compromising the landscape values and visual effectiveness and coherence of the wider ONL. The proposed modifications, such as buildings and lifts, would be contained within areas that have already undergone substantial change in the form of the formation of access roads, where further change is anticipated by approved consent for Treble Cone, and where further change could be successfully absorbed into the landscape.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We'll take the afternoon adjournment before we continue the questions. We'll adjourn.